Over the good find, he headed out the door. Though Rick wanted to take an easier method, he made himself bike again, even as it got darker. The cold ride gave him time to think and sort through everything that had happened during the day. It had been a stranger one than usual. He wasn't a bleeding heart for animals, but he clearly remembered how noble the wolf had looked when it stared at him. The idea that it could go somewhere safe to be with its own kind was somewhat satisfying. However else his job shook out, that was a decent thing that he'd accomplished. When he arrived at home, Rick discovered that Melissa had fallen asleep on top of her papers. He considered moving her to her bed, but decided that if she wanted to sleep on her work, that was fine. Instead, he just found a pillow and moved it under her head so she looked a bit more comfortable. That night, he dreamed of walking in the night and staring into silver eyes, but he was fairly certain it was only a meaningless dream. The next day, Rick headed out promptly, hoping to wrap up Granny Whitney's task as soon as possible. It didn't take him long to return to the region, but arriving left him a bit disoriented. All the residue was so unusual, it took him a while to get his bearings back. Eventually, he felt like he had the pulse of the surveying technique and set out to finish his work. Fortunately, he didn't see any sign of the camper or any other meth lab. Apparently, his threat had worked. Technically, that didn't clean his conscience even slightly, but at least it let him focus without any worry of getting shot by some meth head. After all the excitement of the previous day, this was utterly boring. Rick found himself going back through the exercises just for the sake of having something to do, even though he'd already passed the point of optimum benefits. The boredom made him wander too far occasionally, losing the thread of his work, so he had to double back to get it right. Eventually, he found the anomaly in the middle of a normal field. When walking closer, he did notice an area of dead grass that smelled like something toxic had been dumped on it. Otherwise, there was absolutely nothing unusual about the area. Maybe Granny Whitney had used it to hide something, and maybe it had drawn the cloud wolf. But either way, it was over now. Since the area was particularly clean with the departure of the rolling meth lab, Rick registered the find with the wooden sphere. After he got confirmation, he decided to check the merit scoreboard again. 1. Redacted, 248 merits. 2. Panjo, 244 merits. 3. Kate Durham, 233 merits. 4. Heidi Cunningham, 225 merits. 5. Damien, 220 merits. 6. Matchk Baron, 207 merits. 7. Jack Ganas, 206 merits. 8. Oswald, 190 merits. 9. Elliot Rutherford III, 189 merits. 10. Rick Hunter, 186 merits. He was surprised to find himself back in the top 10, potentially higher once he got credit for the anomaly. It was possible that others would also gain merits before he received his, yet many of the numbers looked stagnant to him. Most likely just a symptom of Lucrum anomalies in the region drying up, though he wondered just how far they could extend from Branton. Far enough, and he wouldn't be able to bike there and back. Getting into the top 10 was a strange thing, and he wasn't sure how he felt about that. Continuing to draw a paycheck and get large bonuses, those were definitely good things. But even if he wasn't ever called on for another major assignment, he wasn't sure he wanted the attention that came with the position. Basically, everyone had warned him about the potential consequences. Rick put his phone away and looked back to the road, trying to decide if he would keep working or not. It was the afternoon, and he was hungry. There were still a lot of hours left in the day, but having found one Lucrum anomaly, he wasn't likely to find another. Maybe if Aura flared nearby and Rick threw himself to the side a moment before something tore into the earth where he had been standing. The force from the explosion prevented him from standing, and he skidded on his side. Dragging one hand in the dirt, he managed to slow himself down and then vaulted to his feet. He wasn't hurt, but as Rick raised his fists, he found himself staring at the man who had attacked him.
"There you are."
Jack raised his hands to either side, aura burning brightly.
"Finally got you without anyone nearby. Let's finish this."
Chapter 43, Terms of a Vendetta.
"Wait!"
Rick raised his hands as if he didn't intend to fight, though he was ready to run at a moment's notice.
Why are you going so far? I only fought in the tournament because I had to, and I didn't target your cousin or anything. Whoever they were, they fought a bunch of other people too. Why are you coming after me?
To his surprise, Jack glared at him in pained rage.
Of course, that's the kind of arrogant bullshit I'd expect from someone like you, never giving a thought for those who are beneath you.
All I did was participate. I don't think I even seriously injured anyone. What do you want from me, an apology?
I want to see you suffer as much as she did.
Jack's aura burned down his tattoos and he hunched forward, but he didn't attack.
She bet everything on that fight. My baby cousin was never a fighter. She just needed to win a few points to pay her debts, and you crushed her without mercy.
Never having expected something like that, Rick was struck silent. He tried to search for words, yet the hatred in Jack's eyes suddenly seemed so familiar. The other man tightened his fingers, the aura in his tattoos flickering unstably.
That loss bankrupted her, and you didn't even give a shit. Even now, you talk like it doesn't matter. Family may not mean anything to you, but it sure as hell means something to me. I'm going to extract every bit of pain from your body. Please, just wait.
Rick took a deep breath and forced himself to focus. I have family I care about, too. I was only in the tournament because... Jack let out a roar and charged. Rick's attempt to bridge the gap between them died on his lips. It was too late for words. Needing time to think, Rick leapt through three bunion steps in a row. They stretched his core to the limit, but they got him some distance away faster than Jack's raw speed could keep up. The man was disoriented for only a moment, and then charged him again, but that gave Rick enough time to think. First, what about Granny Whitney's deal to help get rid of Jack? It immediately occurred to him that it was possible that she had betrayed him, giving Jack his location as soon as he'd accomplished what she'd needed. He didn't want to underestimate how ruthless she could be, and getting an enemy minion to murder a liability might look like an elegant move to her. None of that mattered, though, compared to immediate concerns. This far outside town, was Jack trying to kill him, or would it just be the maiming promised earlier? Either way, Rick had no backup and no choice but to fight. And if it came down to a fight, he was still outmatched. Jack caught up to him, hand flying out like a claw. Rick managed to spin aside and hammered his elbow into his opponent's arm. It was a solid hit, but the other man only flinched briefly and then struck at him with his other arm. Now that he wasn't charging from such a long distance, he didn't leave enough of an opening for Rick to retaliate easily. Hand to hand, his opponent's superior lucors would soon give him the advantage. Rick realized that his only chance at victory was to land a critical blow early in the fight. He started with an exploratory kick, counting on Jack to deflect it with a kick of his own, then attack hastily. Rick lunged in, deflecting the blow on his braced shoulder, while lunging in with the other for a blow to the... One shoulder screamed in pain, and then the other crashed into the ground hard. Rick realized that the blow he had blocked had sent him flying before he could land his own strike. Usually his defensive core kept him anchored, yet Jack's offensive power was just too high. This time his core wasn't torn apart, but it had still failed to completely protect him, and he knew his shoulder would have a nasty bruise. Somehow he managed to catch one hand on the ground and flip himself back to his feet. He wasn't a moment too soon, because Jack was leaping after him. Jumping like that would have been a stupid move under normal circumstances, but Rick wasn't braced and had no time to react. It was the most he could do to throw himself back with a bunion step as his opponent smashed both fists into the ground. When Jack connected, a large furrow of the ground exploded in aura that leapt from his tattoos. So that was how he had destroyed the ground earlier. If Rick hadn't used a bunion step and had tried to dodge normally, he would have been hit by the impact. Worse, hitting the earth had barely slowed Jack down. He lunged from his crouched position, crossing the distance between them in shockingly little time. Though Rick could have tried to hold his ground, the way those tattoos were glowing, he didn't want to take that much aura head on. Instead, he fled directly back with another bunion step. The next moment, he executed a step in the opposite direction. Jack had anticipated him retreating and immediately followed, but he hadn't anticipated the reversal. Rick's elbow connected directly with his face and slammed him back into the ground. Though Rick knew it had been a good blow, almost all the momentum from both of their movements going directly into his opponent's face, his elbow hurt. Jack lay on the ground, stunned, yet Rick didn't feel stable enough to take advantage. A moment later, the other man vaulted to his feet. Blood ran down his chin, but when he grinned, it looked like he still had all his teeth. His tattoos had guttered out from the blow, though they soon roared back to life, and then Jack was charging again. Another trick with the bunion step wouldn't work, so Rick resolved to rely on his agility next. He'd use one bunion step to get away predictably and let his opponent see an opening. Then, instead of retreating, he'd dodge at close range and counterattack. Except the first bunion step faltered midway through, Rick's overtaxed lucor giving out. In panic, he tried to feed it new lucrum, but he was too late. The moment of delay made him stumble, and then Jack was on him, dealing a devastating blow to his side. It was the same arm as before, and this time Rick's defenses couldn't hold. He screamed in pain as he felt something crack, but Jack wasn't done, spinning in a kick at his legs. The most he could do was step back and try to deflect the force, but it still cracked against his knees painfully. And in the time it took him to recoil, Jack was attacking again in a flow of devastating blows. Rick collapsed to the ground and tried to protect his face and vital organs, but no further attacks came. He wondered if it could be a trick, yet couldn't help but look up anyway. Jack was staring in a different direction, and for a moment Rick hoped that Granny Whitney was there to assist him, yet it wasn't her or anyone he knew. Instead, it was a tall man wearing the black combat suit of the servants of the American Basilisk.
"So, this is your little vendetta," the man approached with a sour expression on his face. "Your potential employer is not impressed."
The look of fear on Jack's face would have made Rick happy if he wasn't aching from so many injuries. That fear was probably warranted, since they were dealing with a mafia boss who thought little of putting out a hit on people who were inconvenient to him. Rick hoped he wasn't one of those and struggled back to his feet.
"The bastard ruined my cousin!"
Jack stepped up to the man, raising his hands in protest.
"I'm just making it right!"
"They fought in a tournament as opponents of equal weight classes. You're ambushing a boy who's barely stepped into welterweight."
The look of scorn on the hitman's face gave Rick a flicker of hope that he'd get out of this alive.
"But he must have been cheating. There's no way he could have won otherwise."
"More importantly,"
the hitman kept speaking as if he hadn't been interrupted,
"you're drawing the wrong kind of attention to yourself. If you can't obtain a position in the CSLA, your work so far has been completely useless to us."
I know that."
Jack seemed a bit chastened, but still shot a glare of hatred at Rick.
"You can't tell me I have to just forgive and forget."
"There's no sense in profitless compassion. We'll give you a chance, but we have terms."
The hitman raised his hand and began listing off items finger by finger.
"First, no official duels. You don't need that kind of scrutiny. Second, don't get others involved, and nothing overtly illegal. Same reason. Third, you will receive one, and only one, chance to discharge this vendetta. Fourth, it must occur within 3 months and before the end of the examination period."
While Jack grumbled, Rick just tried to figure out what the specific consequences were for him. Most likely it meant that Jack was still coming for him, but hopefully it meant that he couldn't try to attack Melissa or anyone else. That was better than nothing, but he still faced an attack from a superior opponent. The hitman pulled something from his coat and moved over to Rick, who flinched but held his ground. To his surprise, the object was not a gun, but a small wand that reminded him of a handheld metal detector. When it came close, there was a surge of aura, so it was obviously something different. Though Rick might have been able to resist if he'd marshaled his defensive core immediately, he was too beaten for that and felt something pass through his lucrum soul.
"Do you accept?"
The hitman stared at him with cold eyes, and Rick just stared back.
"What? Do I have a choice?"
"Limited vendettas like this are a tradition in the mafia. You will be targeted regardless of if you agree, and if you do not agree, you'll be at a disadvantage."
The hitman waved the wand back and forth.
As part of the terms, both of you will receive information on the other's Lucrema portfolio. I already have yours, so only refuse if you aren't interested in your opponent's.
There was no choice at all, then. Rick nodded grimly. Fine, I accept.
Very good, then. Hopefully this will all be wrapped up smoothly.
The hitman waved the wand near Jack, who seethed, then tapped several buttons on it. Moments later, Rick heard a notification from his phone. Despite the tension, he found himself checking out the data he'd been sent. Unsigned Lucrema portfolio. Data is not verified and may be suspect. Foundation, 4200, level 5. Aura Inc. Foundation, 37,875, level 7. Offensive design, 43,500, level 9. Defensive design, 12,125, level 6. Raging Eagle design, 7,600, level 7. Acceleration Lucor, 8,700, level 6. Total Lucrem, 38,250.
His opponent was definitely no coddled birthrighter. Jack's portfolio spoke of skills earned through combat and hard work. The gap between them wasn't quite as massive as he'd feared, but it was still sizable. His opponent had over 75,000 lucrem invested in cores and over 110,000 lucrem if his foundation was counted. Rick looked up and saw Jack glaring at him, his tattoos still spitting out sparks of aura. How could he win this? There was no more conversation, and apparently the terms prevented Jack from attacking him right that moment because the other man left with the hitman. That left Rick to limp back toward the highway, nursing his wounds. He didn't think his arm was broken after all, but it was going to hurt like hell in the morning. Most likely with Lisa's help he could heal from this, but that wouldn't be enough. When he got to the highway, he fumbled with his bike chip, failing to properly manifest it. Before he managed it, a dark car with tinted windows drove up beside him, gliding silently just above the road. The window slid down, and he wasn't surprised.
Get in, dearie. Oh my, you look a fright.
He eased into the seat she offered, forced to admit that at least the seats were comfortable. This vehicle was much more like a limo, though with no driver. Granny Whitney sat on the opposite side, looking at him as if entirely too pleased with herself.
You heard the terms of the agreement, yes? Now you have a bit of protection.
That was what you offered.
Rick was too tired and injured not to scowl at her. He's still going to do his best to maim me. That's barely any help at all.
All I wanted was for you to carry a few dozen packages.
Granny Whitney's eyes met his without the slightest trace of mercy.
But you chose not to help out a poor old woman and to barter like a skinflint. Well, Granny can be stingy too.
So this was punishment. Rick groaned to himself and closed his eyes. Why meet with me now, then?
I just wanted to be sure that you understood. Oh, and to check on how long it would take you to remove the anomaly.
It's done.
Really? Then you fulfilled your part of the deal.
Granny Whitney sat back with a pleased expression.
In that case, all you need to do is survive Jack's assault, and everything will be wrapped up with a nice little bow.
Rick stared at her.
And how am I supposed to do that?
You're a resourceful boy. I'm sure you'll figure something out.
Chapter 44. Planning a Rematch. Kept on his guard by the possibility that Granny Whitney might be trying something, Rick actually felt strong and alert the entire way home. He could probably have fought, though not at his best. When no attack occurred, however, and he ended up safely walking up the stairs to his apartment complex, the adrenaline started to run out. When he reached the door itself, he found himself just staring at it instead of turning the handle. Though he'd been in worse shape before, that didn't keep him from feeling shitty while carrying so many injuries. Trying to survive it all felt so useless. No, sleep first, worry later. He managed to get inside the door with only a little trouble. Though Melissa was busy with her work, she did a double take and jumped up.
Oh, God! What is it this time, Rick?
Just had another fight with Jack.
He accepted her help and eased down onto the couch, though doing so forced out an involuntary groan. Somehow sitting felt worse than standing. At least there are terms for the fight now, but they're not much better. Without bothering to hide anything, he explained the terms of the vendetta. The only thing he didn't mention was what Jack had said about his cousin, because it still bothered him. If someone had ever hurt Melissa, Rick wondered if he would feel just as much rage and hatred. He told himself that he wouldn't be that angry if it was just a fair competition, yet... Melissa listened quietly, concerned but not acting so upset that it made him feel guilty. When he showed her the data on Jack's portfolio, however, she grimaced.
That's a lot of lucrum, bro, and he's no amateur. Do you think you can do this?
I might not have to fight him. Rick let his head roll back to rest on the couch, though that made it hurt in a different way than keeping it upright. Since there's a time limit, I win if I can just avoid him for long enough.
Can you do that, though? I mean, you'd have to go outside to work, so he'd have a lot of chances to take a shot at you.
Maybe. Maybe not. I'm ahead of the quota, so if I just stop working, I won't get fired right away. I'd have to run the numbers to see if I could really sit out the entire time. Rick rubbed his eyes wearily. No, I don't think it will work. Not with the requirements increasing every month. Plus, I still need to save more to get a better apartment, much less to afford it long term. My income will be a problem if...
Okay, don't take it all on at once.
Melissa touched his shoulder gently.
Whatever you do, it needs to start with you getting better, okay? So try to relax and let me take care of things.
He nodded, though it wasn't so easy to turn off his brain. Instead, he began to think about everything that was left unfinished in his life. It felt like he was scattered in every direction, but maybe out of that mess he could pull a solution. Not all of the fragments were bad, after all. It was just a matter of being able to put it all together. Though he got a pen and paper to start to write, at some point he leaned back to rest his eyes, and then he was out. Once Rick fell asleep, Melissa set to work. Though she glanced longingly toward her technique work, it was too early for that to be of any help to him. Given how much he'd gotten beaten up over the course of his life, he was pretty good at healing, too. The main thing she could do to help was make some calls. First, she called up Emily, who tersely said that she'd be over when she could get off work. Shaking off the curt conversation, Melissa rolled on to calling Lisa, who promised to come as soon as she could. After that, there was only leaving a message with Uncle Frank, since Rick might want his advice. That was just about it. Their circle of support was better than it had once been, but it was still small. Calls made, Melissa set about cleaning up all of her work. Even if she could trust them, it would just be a whole lot easier not to answer any questions about what she was working on. She was getting close and needed some expert opinions. Most likely Rick was good enough to help, though Melissa did consider how Emily's skill as a Lucrum engineer might make her an even better choice. It was just a question of working up the nerve to ask her. Rick had fallen over into an awkward position with his neck at a weird angle and his mouth hanging open. Melissa gingerly eased him into a better sleeping position, though he seemed so out of it that she wondered if she couldn't have just moved him around like a doll. All her new combat training had left her stronger. Not strong compared to fighters, but strong enough that her brother felt light to her. When there was a knock on the door, Melissa was glad to hop up and answer it. Lisa was on the other side, rushing in and giving her a quick hug.
Melissa, I'm glad you're safe. Based on the way you spoke, I was afraid you were hiding something worse. No, I'm fine.
Melissa put a finger to her lips, then pointed toward where Rick was sleeping.
This isn't the worst he's been beaten up. I know.
Lisa's eyes turned hard, and Melissa was sure she was remembering how Rick had looked after being nearly killed by Terrigen.
Here's the problem. He's going to have a rematch with a guy who did this to him. Not at a set time and probably not with fair terms, so we need to be ready for it, and that sounds like a pretty tall order. Is there, any kind of lucrum massage you can give him that will boost his power? I might be able to help a little, but I'm not sure it will really make a difference in this case. It might help him feel better or recover a little faster. I'd be better off trying to come up with stronger mixtures for him, but I can't rush that process. And if the gap is significant, I don't know that there's anything that will make a big enough difference.
Melissa smiled at her.
We don't expect you to do miracles. Just do what you can, okay?
Lisa nodded and walked around Rick, examining him carefully. She bent down behind his head, her hands not quite touching his neck, and produced some kind of aura. That led to a thoughtful frown and she hesitantly touched his shoulders.
It does feel like he might have sprained something, and one arm is badly bruised. I can help a bit with that. I certainly don't know. Do your thing.
For a while, Lisa worked, and it was awkward to just watch her, so Melissa wandered. She went into her own room and took inventory of what she had remaining, but there was nothing. Her remaining philosopher's elixir wouldn't do him much good, and the pills she'd gotten from the CLAT would be more useful in her upcoming work. For now, this was all she could do. Another knock on the door took her out of her wandering.
Oh, that must be Emily.
Melissa went to the door cheerfully, though she saw out of the corner of her eyes that Lisa pulled away from Rick as if his skin had gone hot. Wasn't too hard to figure out what was going on there, but Melissa just wanted everyone to get along long enough to work together. This was not the time for any drama.
Hey, Emily,
Except when she opened the door, it wasn't Emily. Instead, it was some guy in a fancy suit, all black and crimson. She realized that it must be Damien from Rick's descriptions, but she'd never seen him before. He was handsome, but he had the look of someone who was trying way too hard to look that way. They just stared at each other for a bit before he spoke.
Sorry to just drop.
What the heck are you doing here?
She folded her arms and blocked the doorway, hoping that he couldn't see past her to Rick.
I know what happened because I heard about the aftermath from the other side. Jack is pissed, but he's not going to come after Rick right away. Instead, he wants to plan for a decisive match.
Damien gave her a smile that she had to admit was a bit charming.
I'm not going to say I'm on your side, but in this match, I'm in your court.
All right, I guess.
After giving him a long stare, Melissa opened the door and stepped aside so he could come in.
But if you don't have any help to offer, we're kicking you out.
Oh, well then, I'll be on my best behavior.
Damien walked in and greeted Lisa. Though Melissa knew that she should probably introduce them or something, she was too anxious to think about that kind of thing. Why wasn't Emily there yet? Obviously she had work, but Melissa had assumed she could get off somehow. When she turned back, she saw Damien kiss Lisa's freaking hand like he was straight out of a movie. Lisa gave him a look and pulled her hand back. That was super weird, but then again, from everything Rick had told her, Damien himself was pretty weird.
What exactly are you here to offer?
Lisa asked. Damien shrugged good-naturedly.
I can't afford to throw in direct support, but I'm happy to coordinate since we have a mutual enemy. I also have some valuable intelligence regarding this potential duel.
Damien paused ominously, but when the two of them just stared at him, he was forced to go on.
I think Rick actually has a chance to dodge this fight if he wants.
Melissa moved in closer, eyeing him suspiciously.
How? The guy has a hate-on for my brother.
Yes, but I know that he's planning to spend a period of at least a few weeks preparing for the fight. That knowledge would let Rick focus entirely on surveying. He could build up a sufficient lead that once Jack goes on the warpath, he could pull back and avoid him until time runs out.
I don't know if my brother will go for it. Seems really risky.
But you don't have many options. I think you're underestimating just how high the risk would be of the fight itself. You haven't seen what Jack will do if he knows he only has one shot left to take.
No. Rick sat up on the couch, looking even more tired than before, but obviously having followed the last part of the conversation.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't agree. If Jack doesn't get his fight, he might resort to something worse. Plus, there's too much chance involved, and I could end up in a fight anyway, one way or another. I need to assume the fight will happen. Remember that the American Basilisk hired him to infiltrate the corporation. You really think he's going to risk his contract with someone that important for a little vendetta?
Maybe. It's a real risk. Rick looked grim for a moment, then stared at Damien as if for the first time. Wait, why are you here? Melissa stepped in at that point.
He just showed up, since apparently he heard about the fight. I let him in because I figured we could use all the help we can get. Sorry.
No, that was the right decision.
His brother gripped the edge of the couch and got to his feet, wincing slightly as he did so. They all stood around after that, though, not really getting started. Though she'd never wanted to play hostess, Melissa decided that they needed a bit of something to distract them, so she skipped to the kitchen.
Does anybody want something to drink? By something, I mean water, because that's all we have right now. Also, we only have a couple glasses, so somebody is going to have to use a sippy cup.
Oh, that's fine, Damien said. I always drink straight from the faucet.
She shot him an amused glance, but did pour water for everyone. They took it, not so much because they needed a drink, but to have something to do. Everyone was loitering in the kitchen with their water when there was finally another knock on the door. Melissa headed for it, though she kept her enthusiasm in check this time. Fortunately, it was actually Emily this time. She strode in, ignoring everyone else to check on Rick from multiple angles. Once he met her approval, she nodded slightly.
Your defensive corps fared better this time. That's good. I think I've done everything I can.
Lisa set down her cup and headed toward the door, briefly touching Melissa's arm.
Thank you for calling me, but I'll leave the fighting to all of you. Good luck.
Before Melissa could object, she was out the door. Her brother looked troubled, but said nothing. Emily didn't seem to notice, while Damien just glanced after her with a cool look before shrugging and refocusing. Now that Emily was there, it seemed clear that the conversation was going to kick into high gear because she wasn't waiting around. First, they caught her up to speed with the details. As soon as she'd heard it all, Emily nodded.
I agree with Rick. A fight is extremely likely, so we need to prepare for that eventuality.
Our one major advantage is that we know Jack's portfolio.
Rick pulled it up on his phone and passed it around.
Unfortunately, he knows mine too. I think that's overall in my favor since there's nothing special hiding in my portfolio. He's seen what I have, other than all your moral support.
Though her brother barely glanced at her when he said it, his tone and the way his eyes shifted sent a warmth throughout Melissa. Even if she couldn't help directly, at least she could give him one advantage. Maybe punching her void flame into someone wasn't the most powerful attack, but at least it was completely invisible to their opponent. When it came around to her, Melissa looked at the numbers again, even though they were already familiar to her. Unsigned Lucrema portfolio. Data is not verified and may be suspect. Foundation, 4200, level 5. Aura Inc. Foundation, 37,875, level 7. Offensive design, 43,500, level 9. Defensive design, 12,125, level 6. Raging Eagle design, 7,600, level 7. Acceleration Lucor, 8,700, level 6. Total Lucrem, 38,250. Strangely, Emily and Damien glanced at each other after looking over the portfolio. After a pause, Emily spoke first.
I won't lie, this is a difficult matchup for you. Overcoming a gap when your opponent is incompetent is one thing, but this gap won't be easily made up. It only happens in movies because the enemies are idiots or the hard parts are skipped with a training montage. I was going to ask something, Melissa said. What's this Raging Eagle thing? It's an explosive ranged attack. It was a celebrity tech, so I can get you exact specs later. Given that he didn't use it before, he must hold it in reserve. Being prepared for that will be a definite advantage, but beyond that...
The most obvious step is to create a new Lucor to counter the opponent.
Damien stroked his chin thoughtfully, and though the motion looked a bit pretentious, his eyes were completely serious.
I think that's a bad idea in this case, at least nothing too complex. A guy like Jack knows his weaknesses and will be ready to counter any cheap attempts at them.
Rick nodded in understanding. I was thinking on that subject. But if not that, what?
What if you just leaned into your strengths? Your opponent relies heavily on his offensive capabilities. If you can block those, he'd be helpless.
I can't. Rick shifted back to sit on the back of the couch. After putting a lot of thought into it, I don't think it's possible. That tattoo skill has truly absurd offensive power, probably because his whole secondary foundation is devoted to supporting it. My defensive core is enough that it won't kill or disable me instantly, but I don't think there's any way I can get to the point where I can just fight through the blows.
Which is why he's a bad matchup for you.
Emily pressed her lips together into a thin line for a moment before she continued speaking.
The most obvious solution is to improve your mobility.
I plan to, and I might ask Delson on that front, but I really don't think that will be enough.
After that, they lapsed into silence. Melissa knew that she was no expert fighter, but she didn't like to see them all this grim. When the silence persisted, she decided to risk chiming in.
If you can't stop taking injuries, What about getting rid of them? Could you build a healing Lucor before fighting him again?
At least nobody said she was stupid for the idea, considering it seriously. But it wasn't very long before Emily shook her head, her bangs snapping back and forth sharply.
A good thought, but I don't think it's a viable strategy. If you invested enough, you might be able to learn a healing skill in a short time, but healing skills are more difficult to use effectively. Being able to heal yourself in the middle of fast-paced combat is a level of mastery no one here has reached.
Melissa shrank back, a bit disappointed. However, she noticed that there was a new light in her brother's eyes, and he began to speak. If my goal is to make myself more comparable to Jack instead of reinvesting my portfolio to face him, then the most obvious step is to develop a new foundation. I might be close to gaining one, but the problem is that I don't know its exact characteristics.
What does that mean?
Emily regarded him dubiously, but he moved on. I've been talking to a man named Delson Lingering Ogre, and he agreed to teach me once I had my current foundation developed further. I say we find out what benefits it grants, then build the rest of our strategy around that. After a pause, Damien slowly began nodding.
We might have to do that. Normally, she'd be right, and it'd be pure idiocy to bet on you, but you're in an unusual position with a lot of resources available to you and some potentially significant gains. If you can make all those come together into something coherent, you might have a chance.
Then we're agreed.
Emily nodded sharply.
Rick, I'll leave it up to you and your sister to help you recover and improve your foundation. I'll be planning what I can, though I'm going to need to talk to the old man to know what we're working with.
That might be difficult, Rick said, but I'll see what I can do.
With that, they suddenly had a plan. Melissa breathed a sigh of relief just to have some idea for how they were going to move forward. But the best part was, if her brother needed to improve his foundation, then all her work might be able to help after all.
Chapter 45. Emily's History. Though Rick was getting used to it, that didn't mean he was exactly comfortable with Emily rushing at him, her aura blade slicing. He managed to lean backward, and he felt the sizzling edge pass by his neck. Better than wasting his strength on a large dodge, but he couldn't help but think that the slightest miscalculation would leave him decapitated. If this was a real fight, it was easy to forget that it wasn't sometimes, with Emily attacking him with that deadly expression on her face. She'd already torn some vicious gashes in the walls of their room at the recluse's retreat, despite its heavy reinforcement. Hopefully, she wasn't using that much power when aiming for his neck, but it was hard to tell. A real assault from Emily might be even worse than one from Jack. Which was the point, of course. Since they couldn't invest all his available lucrum or repurpose his generation rate yet, the best form of training was trying to improve his instincts against a deadly opponent. That was one thing he definitely wouldn't have gotten from another girlfriend. When they finished, he was covered in sweat and had to step away to pull off his shirt and towel himself off. While he was catching his breath, Rick examined his portfolio again. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier: 14th. Ether score: 348. Lucrum generation: 53,325. Current lucrum: 53,325. Rick Hunter's Lucrima portfolio. Foundation: 3,650. Level 4. Offensive Lucor: 8,700. Level 5. Defensive Lucor: 21,100. Level 8. Bunyan's Step: 9,175. Level 6. Graham's Stake: 9,150. Level 2. Lucrum Mass: 1,850. N.A. Demon Mass: 500. N.A. Total Lucrum: 53,325. It was discouraging that he hadn't made more progress, but he was currently holding most of his assets in reserve. Once the foundation was properly in place, he could build on it quickly, or so he hoped. They planned to go meet Delson soon, so hopefully they'd make progress there. When he looked up, he found that Emily was watching him, and not with that predatory look in her eyes anymore. Instead, she was examining his torso in a way that was not combat-oriented. It made him feel oddly awkward, but in another way, it was kind of nice.
You're improving quickly. Don't sweat the exact numbers.
She padded across the room to come stand beside him, smiling softly. Rick nodded, but had a hard time pulling himself away. Our sparring has improved the evaluation of the Bunyan Steppe Lucor by a stage, even though we haven't focused on it. I guess you were right about normal speed factoring into it.
Of course I was, but even I don't want to talk about technical stuff all the time.
Emily leaned up to kiss him, placing one hand on his chest as she did so. The kiss was soft and warm, and when she pulled back, she didn't remove her hand.
I know you're pushing to the point right before you break, so why don't I offer a little extra incentive? If you finish my hell course, I'll offer you a more personal reward.
Rick swallowed, since her eyes left no doubt about what she meant. That look and her light touch were putting all kinds of images in his head, but he forced himself to focus.
Emily, that's... as much as I want that, I don't want to mix training and our relationship. It just feels...
No, I understand.
Though the smolder in her eyes faded, she leaned up to give him a quick kiss, then pulled back.
I thought it was a sexy idea, but I completely get what you're saying. Let's sit.
His knees were feeling weak anyway, so it was easy to slump back against the wall of the room. Emily sank down beside him, leaning against him and lacing her fingers through his. He wasn't sure if he was supposed to say something, but settled for putting his arm around her. It was stupid, but he did it uncertainly, like he expected her to be mad about his arm, despite what she'd suggested.
Actually, I know you don't need any extra motivation.
She smiled up at him, this time more her usual sharp smile.
When something important is actually at stake, you're one of the most driven people I know, and I like that. I just know that all of this is hard on you, and I wanted to make it a bit easier.
Thanks, it's good to know you're thinking of me.
And it actually was. Sometimes he felt like she treated him as a human weapon. She seemed to treat herself that way, so he thought he could understand, but it wasn't always pleasant and left him uncertain sometimes. Throwing anything sexual into the mix felt like it would just make it completely impossible to think logically.
I actually really look forward to the day when you catch up to me.
Emily squeezed his hand a bit tighter and settled her head against his chest.
I like training with you, but I don't like leading the training. I hope we can get past all that and just be together, because I do want to be with you.
Rick wasn't sure what to say to that, but before he could get his thoughts together, Emily leaned up and kissed him again. This kiss wasn't as quick, and she shifted fully to face him. His arm slid down to her side for some reason, and whatever he had been intending to do, all thought went out the window when Emily slid up against him. Suddenly, she was straddling his lap to kiss him, and his hand was on the curve of her hip. For a moment, he just fell into it, hungrily feeling her body against his. But the next moment, he was incredibly conscious of the fact that they were alone together in a soundproof room. That should have excited him, and it did on one level, but it had been a long time since his last relationship. So much of his life had been forced by his circumstances, there just hadn't been time. If Emily had gone aggressively, there was no way he could have controlled himself. Her kiss became more intense, and she bit his lip hard, but then she pulled back a bit. She stared at him with their faces almost touching, then gave a much softer smile.
It's been a really long time for me, but I'm not ready. Sorry.
That's okay.
He put an arm around her back and pulled her closer, then immediately cursed himself as an idiot. Yes, it was a nice, affirming gesture, and Emily settled against him happily. It also kept her on his lap, which he was going to regret. He didn't regret that they'd stopped, though. Maybe he was a bit old-fashioned, but he didn't want to throw himself into a relationship too fast. As much as he liked what he knew about Emily, he wanted to know a lot more. Her comment about training him rang true. Too much of their relationship was based on issues of power.
Emily?
He stroked her back, hoping that he wouldn't ruin things.
I never want to push you, but you hardly ever talk about yourself. There are so many things I don't know. I mean, I understand if you don't want to talk about everything, but...
She was completely still for a moment, then shifted off his lap. Rick worried that he'd offended her, but she moved to sit beside him again, leaning against his side. Since she hadn't left, he put his arm around her again and just gave her space.
I'm not used to talking about that sort of thing.
Her voice was much softer than he was used to, and her hair fell so it was hard to see her face.
I want to, but, Rick, If I tell you something, will you promise not to tell anyone? Not even your sister?
I think I can promise that, unless it's something crazy that's a threat somehow.
No, nothing like that.
Emily was silent for a long time, then spoke quietly.
Do you know very much about the Southeast Asian front of World War IV?
Of all the directions Rick had guessed the conversation might go, that was not one of them. He stared down at her, then realized how vulnerable she was being and struggled to answer. Only a bit. History classes in school almost never got to recent history.
Then I won't get into the politics of it. What matters is that my parents went off to fight with the rebels, and I do mean they just abandoned us.
A tide of bitterness rose in her voice as she spoke.
3 children in a war zone, and they just left us with a family friend. Not a very good friend in the end, because when the economy collapsed, we were a liability and got sent off.
That's horrible. Your parents didn't come back.
Given the casualties in the war, I assume they're dead. If they're not, that's worse, because all of us were put in an orphanage controlled by one of the local mafia sects. Those sects claimed to fight for kin and country, but they didn't care. They used all the orphans as slave labor, either to put together crude munitions or, if you showed any talent, to refine lucrum.
Rick listened in horror. Part of him didn't want to hear, but if Emily was finally being open, he wanted to know the truth about her. When she was silent for a while, he decided it was safe to prompt her.
You said there were 3 of you. What about your siblings?
Emily gave a bitter snort.
You'd think that experience would bring us together, but it didn't. We don't talk much anymore.
I see. That's awful. I feel like even saying that is making light of it.
He swallowed as he thought back to their first conversations.
Shit, I'm sorry for what I said, implying that your parents gave you everything. I had no idea.
No, it's fine.
Emily brushed her hair out of her face and gave him a reassuring smile.
I'm not comparing hardships, Rick. I'm really not. The story isn't actually over. Before we got too old, humanitarian organizations came in and rescued us. I got an excellent education, and because my scores were good, they sent me over to an elite school in the United States. So, as shitty as my parents were, at least they didn't curse me into adulthood like yours did.
All he could do was nod, taken aback by the revelation. Maybe it didn't change anything immediately, but it was crazy for him to imagine that Emily had once been a war refugee. Somehow, it made him feel simultaneously closer to her and further away. Before he could think of anything to say, Emily went on, all the warmth from a moment ago draining from her voice.
Here's the thing, Rick. That mafia sect still exists. When the country industrialized, it became a significant corporation, and now it has a huge influence on the government. I can ignore that, but the men who ran the orphanage have attained positions of rank.
She pushed away, fury in her eyes cast far beyond him.
They've never once apologized, never even acknowledged what they did in the war. The same man is still in charge.
Damn.
What was he supposed to say about actual war crimes? Rick tried to stroke Emily's back, but now her posture was stiff and unyielding.
So, are you involved with activism about this? Trying to make the government acknowledge the war crimes and issue an apology?
No. One day I will go back. I will force him to apologize, and then I will kill him.
Rick's throat was unbelievably dry, and he stared at her. There was absolutely no hint that she was joking, only a deep fury that he now realized had always lurked underneath her calm. She no longer seemed focused on him, but he felt like he needed to say something or he'd drown in the new fact.
Is that why you have the secret lethal version of your aura blade?
That's right.
Emily pulled back and softened a bit, returning to her normal calm.
It's also how Granny Whitney convinced me to participate in the tournament. She had detailed information about the current state of the organization. I'm not strong enough yet, but when I am, I'll be prepared.
He had absolutely no idea what to say to that. After a pause, Emily leaned in again and gave him a peck on the lips, though he was too stunned to kiss back.
You're the best person I can imagine beside me through all that, Rick. I don't want to draw you into a big quest for revenge, but I can imagine you being at my side, and I want that.
Emily. It wasn't sure what to say and just trailed off. Fortunately, she just gave an odd smile and then stood up.
Sorry, that's a lot to drop on you all at once. And I'm serious about helping you with your problem now. All of that is a long way off, so for now I just want a stable career that can get me closer to my goals. Sorry if that was too much.
Rick stood up and put a hand on her shoulder.
No, thank you for telling me.
Truthfully, though, he wasn't sure if he was glad. His view of Emily before had been incomplete, but it had been easier. He wasn't sure how he felt about this Emily, but it wouldn't leave his mind. The moment when they had been kissing felt like a very long time ago.
Chapter 46. Melissa's Technique. For a few days, her brother had been out of sorts, throwing himself into his training. But that day, when he came back from work, Melissa was glad to see him in a better mood. That was good timing, especially given how things had advanced with her. She straightened up from her place on the couch to grin at him.
No ambushes by Jack today.
Nope, all clear. I actually managed to find another anomaly, too. He kicked off his shoes and walked into the kitchen area to find something to eat. Everything okay here? She nodded and decided to hide her eagerness via some more mundane questions.
Yeah, it's all good. How many more anomalies do you need, though? And when are you going to run out of them?
That's actually a really good question. He glanced back at her, momentarily serious again. The quotas are increasing such that it seems more like they're trying to eliminate people than actually creating a fair work environment. No one in the top 10 is in danger of falling behind just yet, but I worry they're leading up to something.
Yeah, and things will be coming to a head with Jack no matter what.
She kept a smile off her face and searched for something else to talk about.
Any progress on that secondary foundation thing?
Sort of. Emily insisted on an appointment with Delson and we're going to go meet with him soon. I hope we might get some answers, but I'm not sure. Uncle Frank said that I should go with an M-type foundation. It would take an investment of all the lucrum I've been storing up, but it's true that it would massively increase my generation rate quickly. I don't know, though. Her brother was mindlessly eating cereal out of the box, eyes staring off into the distance. Dang, she just wanted to distract him, but now she'd brought up something serious. Melissa hopped up to lean over the back of the couch and look at him directly.
You're thinking you don't want to?
Yeah, maybe so. He swallowed and then set the box down absently. For so much of my life, Uncle Frank has been my source of advice for everything. It feels really weird to disagree with him about something. I mean, he's the most successful member of our whole family, and he's obviously given a ton of great advice.
Relax, bro. I'm not going to judge you. Uncle Frank is great, but nobody's perfect. What are you thinking?
Well, the overhead on an M-type foundation is really heavy. If you're set up in life and know what you want, I can see how it'd be a good investment. But in my position, when I run the numbers, there's a good chance it wouldn't work out. It could turn out more like a demonic bond, and I could end up with a nasty aura leech. Though she hadn't planned for things to get anywhere near that serious, Melissa did her best to give her brother what little advice she could.
You don't need to decide ASAP, right? I mean, I know you need to decide soon for training purposes, but you could talk to Delson and get information about his foundation so you can make a full decision, right?
Yeah, I definitely could. You're right. Rick shook his head and abruptly looked at her. All right, now what is it that you've been so eager to tell me?
Oh, dang it.
How had he known? Her brother could be so oblivious sometimes. Then sometimes he just saw straight through her. Still, she couldn't even feign annoyance for more than a second before she leapt up in excitement.
I know exactly what Lucor I want. I've actually been working on it for a long time, doing a bunch of research. Heather was really helpful, and Emily showed me some designs online.
She eagerly went over her plans, intentionally moving around the main surprise. Her brother came to sit down beside her, always reliably interested in such details. It felt great to be able to talk about those things with him, though she could see that he was trying to put it together in his head. Though she dragged it out, eventually, he just addressed it directly. All right, I think I get the theory. I was nervous about using your steel lucor for another purpose at first, but I get how that could be a stable system. From the specs, it seems like it could work, and I don't see any problems in your lucrimasole. But what are you using it to do?
That's the best part.
Melissa went and got one of the embarrassing books, opening it to the drawing that had started all this.
This is a heavily modified version of an old technique called Manifest Destiny. Now, don't read the text. The creator believed a whole lot of ridiculous things. Just look at this part where it talks about the effects.
Manifest Destiny brings out the destiny of the user's soul, displaying outside the glory within. He understood immediately, eyes slowly rising to meet hers. It's a method of weaponizing an aura spark, but for you...
That's right!
She couldn't help but throw up her hands triumphantly as her brother became the first person in the world to learn the truth of her technique.
It should manifest the ether void outside me, but in a controlled state. That way I don't just devote so much of my generation rate to keeping it from killing me, I can actually use it.
You're crazy, but in a good way. Her brother grinned at her as if he couldn't quite believe it. Are you sure that it will work and not backfire on you?
Oh, I did all the usual safety things. Testing theoretically and with other substances in small amounts, but I haven't actually tried to use it for real.
Melissa was still grinning like an idiot and struggled to get it under control.
Rick, will you help me test? I don't think anything will go wrong, but after you've helped me so many times, I think you're the best person to be here if anything does.
Of course. He got serious much faster than her, of course, getting to his feet. I won't say that I'm not nervous, but if you've done all the research, then we have to give it a try.
Great.
Melissa shot up, got into a combat stance, and closed her eyes. A few seconds later, she opened one again.
Gimme a sec. I put a whole bunch of safeguards in place.
He nodded and stood at a distance, giving her time. Melissa tried to calm down, not thinking about what she hoped to accomplish. Instead, she just reached down and touched the sphere she'd built around the void where her soul should have been. Then, she reached inside. All the lights in the room dimmed, and she let out a yelp of surprise. Everything snapped back to normal the next second. She grinned sheepishly and pulled herself back together, again focusing. The task wasn't so difficult, she was just nervous because this time was for real. All she needed to do was touch the flame and not let it burn her. There was nothing to burn. She was the flame. It surged from within her, this time stably. Melissa opened her eyes and saw that an aura had lit up around her, but that was the wrong language because it was no normal aura. Instead of casting light around her, it seemed to drink it all in. The void was outside her core, yet it wasn't a threat, not to her. She took a step forward, and something felt strange. When she looked down, she saw that her foot was sizzling into the floor, burning the carpet. Melissa let out a cry of panic and tried to pull back the effect, unsuccessfully. Dang, it was harder to control than she thought, but... Without warning, her brother lunged in to tackle her, his arms wrapping around her. She had a moment of true terror, afraid that the aura would consume him. Yet somehow Rick resisted. He actually might have been able to smother it and save her if she had been out of control, but it wasn't anywhere near that bad. Melissa withdrew it and just leaned forward into his arms.
It's okay, bro. I'm fine. Just wasn't completely controlled.
You're sure? He pulled back and looked at her, concern obvious in his face.
Absolutely sure.
She wanted to hug him again, but she was also excited about the technique.
What did it look like? Was it badass?
Rick stared at her for a while, then shook his head with an odd grin. Yeah, it was. I've seen black auras before, but yours was... I don't know, it was like it leached the light out of everything else. Intense in a way that was just... different. He looked down and frowned, noticing some burns on the carpet for the first time. Melissa hadn't realized there were so many, and now felt a surge of regret. But Rick just smiled. It's a potent effect, though. You should be proud.
Actually, it should have done more than that. I don't know if it's because you're more used to it, but your lucrimasoul didn't react anything like people at the gym.
Melissa pondered that for a moment, trying to figure it out, but in the end she was just too excited. She tried her technique a few more times, at first not getting it due to fear of overshooting again, but eventually getting a handle on it. Finally, she stood with her void manifested around her, and she felt amazing. Nothing had felt like this since the first time she had discovered the cure for her condition, and she was glad to have her brother standing nearby, grinning back at her in pride.
Congratulations, sis. What are you going to call it?
She blinked, not having thought much about that part.
I don't know. I think the original name sounds kind of cool.
No, you can't run around with a Lucor name to manifest destiny in your portfolio. Maybe some people won't recognize it, but that's just asking for trouble. At best, people will get the wrong impression. Her brother folded his arms and examined her thoughtfully. I'm surprised you don't already have a name picked out. Howling Black Destiny Inferno or something. Melissa giggled.
I'd never choose such a ridiculous name. Maybe Ultimate Howling Black Destiny Inferno of the Sublime. Now there's a name.
Well, you have time to decide. Even if you don't register the Lucor, you can still rename it on your end.
No, I want to now. I just...
She let the flames dissipate and just stared into space.
I don't know. I'm really coming up with nothing. You name it, bro.
Me? But I...
Do it. Something cool. Maybe kind of similar to the original name, but changed a bit.
He protested that he wasn't good at names, but helped her brainstorm anyway. Eventually, they came up with Manifest Destruction, which Melissa thought was amazing. Sure, it'd be goofy to shout it out like she was in an old movie, but if she actually built the technique up to the level she wanted? Abruptly, she looked down and realized just how much of the carpet she'd damaged in all her attempts. Part of the couch was looking pretty damaged, too. Melissa winced and looked at her brother guiltily.
Sorry. I'm sure I can stop it from doing that once I get more practice. But we probably lost our security deposit, didn't we?
Oh, don't worry about it. Years ago, that would have been a disaster. But now, Rick just shrugged. It's not all that much compared to a better apartment, and the landlord was probably going to cheat us out of it anyway. Besides, a skill like yours is worth a lot more than that. Melissa lunged in to hug her brother, this time without any void flames around her. Their embrace felt even warmer. Chapter 47. The Dark Blood Kettle. It felt deeply strange to be approaching the Peakless Wildlife Refuge along with Emily. Maybe it was the fact that they were in her car instead of biking, but he didn't really think it was that. No, it had something to do with how the refuge was so far away from Branton. It felt unconnected to all the problems in his life. Some part of him felt that bringing someone else would ruin that. The idea was ridiculous, of course. The very reason he'd been there was because the refuge was entangled with the local politics in the form of Lucrum anomalies. Besides, though Emily seemed quite irritated at Delson for refusing to give details, he didn't think she'd ruin anything. He glanced over at Emily, fixated on driving with her usual intensity. When she noticed his gaze, she turned enough to smile at him, and he felt a strange twinge within him. Though he always liked seeing that smile, recently?
We're almost there, right?
She asked. He nodded and pointed to the trail, though it was fairly obvious. Just up that way, and then we'll reach the office.
Good. If he hadn't been correct about the jackalope anomaly, I'd be suspicious of this guy.
Emily's fingers tightened on the wheel, and she frowned toward the office as it approached.
People who put a lot of effort into playing the wise old master bit are usually running a scam of some kind.
Rick chuckled. If Delson is doing that bit, he's doing it in a strange way. Working with Melissa's new technique had finally increased his foundation's rating, plus he had over 2,000 excess generation rate, so he was ready to approach Delson. Going over the threshold had actually been somewhat boring. He was much more interested in Melissa's manifest destruction. Dangerous as it was, she was getting better control over it every day. As they walked up to the office, Rick thought that it looked darker than usual. He'd been hoping that Emily could meet Wemelat and Atsala first, rather than running into Delson immediately, but it looked like that wasn't happening. The old man detached himself from the place where he'd been leaning, until that moment, so still he'd been like part of the building.
All right, guess it's finally time to make things square.
Delson had his thumbs hooked on his belt loops, but the casualness of his posture felt forced.
You can't bring along your friend, though.
You haven't given remotely enough information about this technique of yours.
Emily stepped away from Rick, not at all intimidated by Delson's stare.
I'm not letting him waste his potential on some half-assed local technique.
Delson stepped forward and scowled down at her.
I didn't come to this decision lightly. He's helped us, and I intend to do my best to pay that debt.
You're not helping anyone by surrounding this with so much secrecy.
Yeah, who said you get a vote?
In response, Emily swung. Her aura blade came into existence so quickly that it made a blinding line in Rick's vision, yet the arc cut off abruptly. When he could see, he discovered that Delson had somehow pulled the shotgun off his back and used it to block. The aura blade that had easily sliced through metal stopped against the shotgun barrel. Emily was only surprised for a moment, then she attacked in a vicious assault. It didn't include her most deadly skill, but it was certainly more power than she'd ever directed against him. Delson frowned and took a step back, then actually fired the shotgun, a burst of aura scattering gravel and plants in a wide arc in front of him. She had vaulted overhead, slashing down at him, yet he blurred out of the way. Rick lost track of the fighting for a moment and struggled to catch up. He saw Delson jab Emily in the stomach with the end of the shotgun, and she stumbled back a step. They froze, his shotgun pointed at her casually. His finger wasn't on the trigger, but it lay nearby along the side of the gun.
Okay, you're no fraud.
Emily released her aura blade and ignored the shotgun pointed at her.
But in case you haven't heard, Rick is facing a difficult challenge. He doesn't need just any foundation.
You're not bad yourself, kid.
Delson regarded her appreciatively, then flipped his shotgun over his shoulder to rest in his back holster. Then he shifted so that he was facing both of them, his eyes on Rick.
All right, it's time to talk. I'll be direct, Rick. There's nothing particularly special about you.
Gee, thanks. Rick couldn't get too offended, though, not given the hard seriousness in Delson's eyes.
There's nothing particularly special about this technique either. It won't grant any dramatic powers, it won't transform your body overnight, and it won't instantly double your portfolio. What it will do is give back what you put into it. Whatever you choose to do in life, it will grow along with you.
That sounded good to Rick, but Emily crossed her arms.
Growth foundations are well and good, but that isn't much for technical information. Does it at least offer the basic benefits of a combat-type foundation?